our gal. For those of you who are interested, it's a Japanese thing that's used in a kabuki theater. So, I declare that the July regular meeting of the Committee for Resource Infrastructure of the Cambria Community Services District is now in session. And I see that we have a quorum. We are all here, all five committee members are present, and myself. So first of all, just thank you all for coming. I see now the secret to getting a large attendance. So we look for something somewhat controversial, we should generate some interest. And in fact, it's been said, you know, if we don't hear anything from anybody, either we're doing our job really well, or nobody cares anymore, and we're doing it too horribly. So this is actually really good. And the purpose of these, at least as I see it, the purpose of these subcommittees, or these standing committees, is to provide an opportunity, twofold, an opportunity to exchange information that is more difficult to do in the more formal board meeting setting. Please come in, make yourself comfortable. So this provides a less formal setting, and as much as possible, we like to bend the rules sufficiently so that everyone who has anything to say has an opportunity to say it and be heard. And so that's kind of the philosophy that we want to offer, that I like to offer. So you've heard my gavel, so if we need to use it. The rules of order that we're operating under today is the Rosenberg's Rules of Order. So for committee members, I'm going to send you an email of these so you all have it. Anyone else interested in this, I do recommend it for people who are interested in public meetings, because one of the arguments for using this simpler set of rules is so that other participants, besides people who might be an expert on Robert's Rules, which is that thick, then people can have a chance to understand the operation of the assembly and how things can be done without being daunted by this rather huge and somewhat difficult thing to understand. So anyone else who has interest in receiving this or any other information from me in behalf of the committee, I might ask you to perhaps, when you leave, maybe on this, let me know or let the secretary, Tom Gray, know that you would like to be included on a mailing list, and we'll try to put one together, because I really like to. As I said, I view this as an opportunity for the community to interact or to transmit information to the board, and for the board to pass on information to the public. So that's one thing. And then, of course, the other thing is that we are really making a sincere effort to do what we do in the public eye and make sure that even if you might disagree with some of the decisions of the current board, that you can at least, you'll be able to say, at least you saw them do it. You saw us do it. You might hate us, but you saw us do it. We're doing it behind closed doors. So having said that, again, welcome to all of you. I hope you will find this experience sufficiently positive that you will come back. I find our meetings incredibly interesting, and I would like to hear more from the public about that. Today we'll go until 5. If we need to go longer than that, we can do it by means of a motion, but I'd like to... it's a little hard to be productive even after 2 hours, but we allowed 3 because we knew that we were going to probably have a lot of people wanting to say something. So it's a 3-hour shot. The first 2 items on the agenda are fairly specific, and I don't anticipate that they will take a lot of time. When we get to the third item, 3C on the agenda, Pavel Ogren will be here, and he'll be kind of, he's the person that we'll need to be dealing with in terms of how we go forward with this development permit. Let's do some reports, subcommittee reports, and then I'll talk a little bit about some of the how we should proceed with the public comment. So first, let's do the committees in the order that they were formed. So first, the subcommittee on water. What would you say? Supply and demand.
Supply and demand.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know if Karen wants to add anything. We didn't have a meeting in the interim between the two, full committee meetings. So there's nothing new to report, except that I think Karen might have a report on her efforts to get some information on the offsets from CCSD and how, what the progress of that is. I don't know if you had anything to say about that.
I've asked to be able to know where we are with the community and the retrofit and whether there are water there is to be saved. We have asked several times to see if we can get some documents on the retrofit's points bank, how many points are left at the bank, how they keep track of the in-lieu retrofit points and all of that. And so far, we have not been able to get that information. It seems like the record keeping wasn't real cool once we lost our conservation officer. So some work needs to be done on that before we can get that information and know what else there is out there remaining to be retrofitted and how much water we can save through conservation. So we're kind of at a standstill with that point until our very busy staff has a chance to get the information.
And I should mention our the subcommittee members are Karen Dean, Tom Gray, and Brad Fowles. So if you have, you might wish, if you have particular thoughts on the matter or you wish to bother them a little bit, I'll put you in touch with them. Tom has the...
Do you have anything else?
No, I don't. I said, thank you. And Brad, you don't have any either?
No. No more? Okay, now the subcommittee on the mission statement.
Goals and objectives and a mission statement. So Jim and I were able to come up with a mission statement that I think we're pretty confident with, and we're still working on goals and objectives. The mission statement that we have right now is a Standing Resources and Infrastructure Committee is an advisory committee for matters pertaining to the Cambria Community Services District. We have two options that we'd like to put in here, either physical assets or / infrastructure and resources which lie within the coastal zone. So basically, we're dabbling between both of those. Would be willing to take any sort of comment on that at this point, but that's what those look like. Then for objectives, kind of Jim and I started talking just to kind of discuss the way we're looking at objectives in this. Jim's a fisherman, so we brought a fishing analogy into this, and the objective in fishing would be to go out and have a good time. The goal would be to fish. And so what we're trying to do is come up with what is this, like, this committee really mandated to do versus what are we really shooting for and trying to accomplish. So for objectives, we went with gather pertinent facts, and examples of that would be interface with the district staff and community, research pertinent regulations. There could be a list of other ones that we're trying to work on. Another objective would be assess community needs, determine viability of a project, and provide a mechanism for the community to have discourse. So those are all objectives. I would say that those are things that we really should be doing no matter what. And then goals that we're working on right now, we're working on minimize loss, develop strategies for the accounting and resources, optimize systems, reflect and opine on matters of long-term issues, and stewardship of the ecosystem while providing high-quality water for the needs of Cambria's current residents. And that's kind of what we're working on right now.
Sounds like you're getting a good handle on it. Jim, do you have anything to add to that?
No, it's just we're trying to keep it as unwordy as possible and have done research on many, many mission statements and trying to boil this one down, in part from the information about the consolidated standing committee bylaws that were handed out. That provides some of the wording that we used as a template. And then we've tried to incorporate our own thoughts as well. But again, it's a work in process, and we have not met yet with Pablo, and would like to, and have not met yet with John.
Good. Thank you. So that's actually, when we get to 3B, we'll give the public a chance to weigh in a little bit and perhaps provide some feedback to the subcommittee regarding goals and objectives, things you'd like to see us do or not see us do. That will be your opportunity. Commencing now with public comment. So I want to make sure that everybody has sufficient time to say what they have to say. And you're going to have an opportunity to comment on each, as we get to each agenda item, there will be a public comment time as well. So this initial time is for things that are not directly on the agenda. So If you're wanting to speak to one of the agenda topics, you might want to save that. But during this particular time, you can talk about anything in the world. Legally, you can't really limit you as long as you're being reasonably civil. So if you want to vent, or I recommend against personal attacks and stuff, but if there's something's really bothering you, I have to vent, this would be the time to do it. But I would urge you to try to. Right now, we're all friendly, and there's no tomatoes flying or anything going back and forth, so we try to keep it that way, you know, as much as we can. My own thought in this matter, having listened to everybody and during my campaign and subsequently being on the board, is that while we all differ in many ways, what I've discovered is that actually there are many possible positions regarding the questions that we see divide us. And so one of the things that may come out of discussions like this is I don't know that anyone's going to be convinced to change their position. But if we can get at least some clarity on where we might agree and where the disagreements really lie, I think that that may help us as we move forward. After all, we are a community, and whatever happens, this community is going to happen to all of us. It's the same way with the world, but you know, we're in this boat. If this boat sinks, we're all going down. So we all have a skin in this game, but what that game actually is and where we wish to be, we may have some differences of opinion. So, okay. So the other thing is when you speak, I know most of you, but not all of you, and for the Secretary Tom, who is going to be jotting down who spoke, and for the tape or the recording, we need to know who's saying what. So have a kindness to the folks who may be listening later and identify yourself when you speak. And usually I know who you are, but when you ask to speak, I may ask you to also to put you on my, as you're standing in line, I may have to ask you your name so I can call back on you. So I'm not going to limit the time. Well, let us do this. First of all, how many of you would like to speak during the first public comment? Please raise your hands. Just get a sense of how much time we have. Okay, so I don't think we need to establish a limit for that. What I think we'll do is, as we get to the next agenda item, we'll try to see how much time do we have. And the other thing is, while everyone certainly has a chance to speak once, if there is time and everyone who wants to speak has spoken, then there will be opportunity for a second and a third shot. So that's another thing. So you don't have to say it all at once. And it may be the case that somebody brings a point up that you wish to add to or disagree with, then you might have an opportunity to do that. The other thing, though, that we really would like to avoid, and I'll repeat this as we move forward, is that we do want to avoid crosstalk. That won't get us anywhere. There's too many of us. So in arguments between individuals in this particular forum won't be super productive. So what I'd like you to do is, even though you're addressing the whole room and whoever else might be listening on the tape, please address your comments to me, and then if someone wishes to respond, they can raise their hand and I can recognize them, and they will, again, to keep personalities as much out of it as possible. So just keep your, and you don't have to address me as Mr. Chairman, though, you can call me. We don't have to, if things get contentious or complicated, we may have to be more formal. But at this point, I think, since you all look pretty friendly, and here comes Pablo, thank you, Pablo, I think we'll be pretty good at being more formal, as long as we're reasonably nice to each other. Now, having said that, I'll open this for public comment. So, first, Hank.
Can I start? Or?
Yeah, you may begin. You are the first one.
I'm Hank Kresak, and I'm from your suburb of San Simeon. Because we do provide a lot of workers and a lot of customers for the businesses here. But I'm an individual community member. I'm not an official of the district. But I do feel that we haven't done a good job in San Simeon of keeping the Cambria community aware of what's going on. A little less than 2 weeks ago, the Coastal Commission voted, and the community of San Simeon agreed that it will move its wastewater treatment plant away from the ocean within 10 years. and they tightened up deadlines so that there has to be a plan produced within 3 years of the alternatives and a recommendation for what to do with the San Simeon wastewater. So that's a big initiative. But again, I apologize because I know I've received some comments that people in Cambria have been properly informed. And again, I'm doing that as an active resident in the community to try and let you know. So there will be activity in that area. I know that at least one board member from Cambria, and in fact two at times, attend our board meetings of recent to keep up with what's going on there. So that is appreciated as well. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Hank. Because there are so many of us, it probably might be a good idea if you stand when you speak, just so you can be heard. It's okay. I wasn't quite sure. But and if you're having trouble hearing, do speak up so that we can be sure that everyone hears what's said. So after Hank, someone else would like to talk? This is a generalized comment about anything. Yes.
Yes. My name is Lou Block. I was a board member from 96 through 2000. Worked for the Regional Water Board for nearly 20 years. I still am a licensed geophysicist, geologist, engineering geologist, and hydrogeologist. And I just want to talk about public safety. Two issues particularly. First one, PG&E is going bankrupt right now because of the fire hazard that we all know exists here in Cambria. That's not directly why PG&E is going bankrupt, but we have the same issue. Reverse osmosis still has not made water fast enough to put fire out. And if there is one essential item of survival in this community, it's our ability to be able to cope with a wildfire. I was on the board, the fire department was very clear about how little storage that we had and how if two houses caught on fire, the tanks would run dry and the whole town would burn down. So first point is all of the effort and money and things that we put towards anything else that takes away from this is a question to the existentialism of this town. And it also is hurting the values. Because everyone's about to see their fire insurance go through the roof. So it's the first thing. Second thing, it's a little more technical. And it has to do with the mechanics of reverse osmosis and the membranes. When you're pushing salt water through a membrane, if you have a pinhole leak and a little salt leaks through it, it's not a big deal as long as that hole doesn't get big. When you're pushing wastewater through a reverse osmosis, you have to deal with pathogens. Now I'm going to get real specific, and this is a tough subject for me. There are lots of pathogens, but some are much less understood than others. I personally have one called mycoplasma. You may have heard of it as Gulf War syndrome. I am receiving the same treatment that the Navy SEALs and Marines received when they got Gulf War syndrome, from the same doctor who they made an honorary SEAL. Turns out that mycoplasma is the smallest pathogen known to man, which means it's not a whole lot bigger than a water molecule. As a matter of fact, it may pass through the membrane with no hose. It's a bacteria without a cell wall. And I just hope that we haven't already let the cat out of the bag this time. Because I use the restroom here, and that lives in me.
Interesting. Yep.
So, I really hope everyone doesn't come down with this. The bad news that I have to tell you about it is the U.S. government doesn't want you to know this exists. Because the U.S. Army has a patent on the disease I have. It's a bioweapon. In my case, it causes reactive rheumatoid arthritis and chronic fatigue syndrome.
Wow.
So, anyway, those are two things that I thought really needed to be put on the table.
Okay. I don't know whether to thank you or not for that.
That's all right.
It's just the truth.
But no. Pablo, when you choose to, there is a chair for you up here.
No, I was thinking when the agenda item comes
okay.
up.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay, moving along. Thank you very much.
That was all
As I said, I'm not sure if I want to. Okay. Another speaker? Laura.
I'm Laura Swartz, private citizen, resident, whatever you want to call it. Anyhow, mine's, I'm not sure it's any more cheerier than Liz's. It kind of ties into that. And what I wanted to just bring up for more discussion, so everybody's really aware of it, the thing that we picked up at the last CCSD meeting, wasn't for microclasses, but it was a piece of paper, and it was about the affordable housing situation. And the thing is, the affordable housing, we already have a problem, and I'll tie it into Lou's statement, with the fire. We have, when they did the fire safe focus group evacuation, it took them 3.5 hours to evacuate Lodge Hill. Now, it seems like all of the workforce that's being proposed, or all the affordable housing being proposed is also over there. And the two streets that evacuate the area are Burton and Arden. And there's already 494 wait list numbers in that area. And now we just added another 15. So we're up to over 510 houses additionally to be evacuated that already took 3.5 hours for the last study. So that to me is a problem because I live on Lodge Hill.
Yeah.
The other thing with the affordable housing, just a couple of the facts. Well, because the county is going to be subsidizing this, and that means we are also going to subsidize it too, because it comes out of our pocketbook. And for a moderate housing thing, it's almost $80,000 for two people, and they want to have it subsidized that way. It also seems like it's kind of in conflict with the wait list number, because of the timing of it, but we need to subsidize for $80,000 for their workforce. It's $106,000 that they want to put houses in because we need affordable housing. That seems a little bit. In that some of the houses they're talking about, there's already three on the wait list that are on this workforce list. There's already three that are on the wait list, but they have very high numbers, so apparently they're tired of waiting and they're going to try it a different way. There's four of them that are supposed to go into special projects too, where you're not allowed to add any more wait lists, because there are already 62 of them, and it's in projects too, and you're not supposed to add any more. And the other one is, there's one down on Marine Terrace that's adjacent to like the ocean, and they want to put in moderate housing that we're going to subsidize. So I'm just questioning this, the whole system. I wanted to bring out just some facts. And the people that are applying for it, it is local real estate person and then one other person as an agent or an applicant. I don't know who he is. And all of them have been applied for from number 5 down in the month of July. So all of a sudden, there's these two applicants that are putting all of this together. And it just seems a little strange. I just wanted to bring that up.
Oh, thank you. Any other folks for general comments? Okay. Now I do know that, I don't know if I just mentioned this or not. Oh yeah, please come in everybody and pull up a chair. There's a few extra ones in here. And Dave, there's for you back here. Yeah. For people who are, I don't know if I mentioned this or not, so I'll do it again. For folks who would normally be here, but for some reason are out of town but wish to comment, I have said that they could send in letters, which either I would read or anyone in the group might read as a way of getting their things forward.
Do we have copies of these letters?
No, in this case, we don't need one. No. Yeah, the idea being...
You have received it.
No, I don't know. Have I received any?
Well, he's got...
You've got one, but I don't think...
I believe she sent it.
But you have it, right?
But I have.
Yeah, the deal being this, rather than just send it to me, it has to be a part of the meeting.
Okay.
So the person needs to read it. And if you have written comments of your own that you would like included in the minutes, again, as long as you read them in the meeting, we're happy to include them in the minutes, and it's perfectly in order to do that. And Mr. Roper, John Roper, for example, did a very nice presentation last meeting, which we'll see in the minutes, which you may have seen in the minutes for this meeting. So that's kind of the way I'm working on that. And this one, I'm making up my own rule, but with the object being to have as much public input as possible. And as long as that isn't abused, I think we'll continue in that way. So again, for those of you who may be interested in the operations of the committee and wish to make a comment, but in some of our meetings you are not available, if you can find someone else to read your comment, that would be my preference. Otherwise, I would be willing to read it for you. What I probably wouldn't want to do is just have hundreds of people write me letters that I never see at meetings. That's a different story. So as I said, as long as it's within reason, I think it's something that I can do and still be in order. Having said that, we need to do the consent agenda now. We're done with public comment. Yes. Ted, is yours germane to an agenda item or is it general comment?
No, I'm going to speak on free speech.
General okay.
So I don't have any general.
So we're good for the meaning of life or anything else? Or,
no.
Okay, we're done with the general. Or,
no.
What other diseases are lurking for us waiting when we turn on our tap? Okay, so we're ready now to get to the meat of the meeting almost. First, the consent agenda, which is to approve the minutes of our last meeting. Do I have any comment or anything from the committee on this? Give you a chance to meditate on it. Okay.
I move to accept the minutes as written.
Is there a second to that?
Second.
Seconded by Tom, moved by Karen. Are you ready for the question? Okay, all those in favor, please raise your hands. I don't vote, passes unanimously. Mm-hmm. So moving on now to the regular business. So this is item A. I'll read it to you all just as a reminder, and then I'm going to let John Alton present that needs to be presented. This is a discussion and consideration to review the PG&E Investment Grade Audit Proposal, the IGA, the Master Service Agreement, Investment Grade Audit Work Order, and approve the recommendation to the CCSB Board of Directors. Before John begins, this is actually something that this committee has already discussed in great detail and recommended to the Finance Committee, to tell the Finance Committee we felt it was a very good idea and they should go forward and try to figure out if we can afford to do this and if so, how we can afford to do it. The Finance Committee has done their work. I had hoped that it would go from them directly to the board, but instead we're having it back in our lap. So we are receiving the Finance Committee's basically approval, and now we need to pass this, our recommendation, directly to the board. So that's why we're discussing this now. So let me give you John Alton, our wastewater supervisor, and he will let us know why.
Thank
we're
you, Don.
Here.
My name is John Alton. I'm the wastewater supervisor here in Cambria. I've been here about 3.5 years. And upon arrival, we found several things that needed to be repaired. Obviously, the Cambria budget didn't allow for a lot of the repairs. So, in being a little creative, we found a workaround that could possibly work. And with the addition of the 218 funds, it looks like we may be able to leverage this money to get some loans and advance the development or rehab of the wastewater facility and some of the lift stations. So in the beginning, this started off, this is an STS, or a Sustainable Solutions Turnkey Program. It's offered by PG&E. It's authorized through the government. And the idea is that PG&E would come in, identify potential savings via electricity, gas, or any form of energy that can be saved in the, at the facility and outlying facilities. And once they've identified those savings, they can then justify PG&E being a principal contractor in the rehabilitation or construction of the new equipment or replacement or rehab of the existing equipment. So about a year and a half ago, we just started. We got into this these discussions, and I believe that the first time this was seen was roughly 8 months ago at the board. They approved the to move forward with the program. So they did. They did a preliminary energy assessment. They've completed the preliminary energy assessment, and upon completion of the energy assessment, we then need to move into a investment grade audit. The investment grade audit is going to be, that's where we have to pay money. Everything up to now has been at no charge via PG&E, and we've been involved with PG&E since back in 2013. They've done several audits of the facility, and they've identified several places where we can save money. And this was just a grander version of the same thing, and involved engineering firms and electrical engineers. So in the investment grade audit, they'll supply us with 30% to 50% construction design. And then they'll move that 30 to 50% construction design. They'll go out to bid to various contractors. We can choose what contractors we'd like to use, and they can bring in contractors. And we'll go with the contractor that's going to give us the best bang for our buck. Excuse me. And those are the bids that will come back in the IGA. So the original assessment was the values that they gave on that assessment was worst case scenario. So if we had to build everything new from the ground up, this is what it would cost. And the actual construction we will not know until the investment grade audit has been completed. So to get to that point, we need to review the contracts. The contracts have been received, and I believe the contract is a little further back. The contract has been looked over by district council, and the majority of the contract stays intact. There's just some verbiage that's been added to clarify who's responsible for what, but for the most part, the contract has remained the same. I guess I should ask for questions. Is there something else that needs to be clarified? I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Let me, before we commence, I understand correctly the way the contract is, as you've read it so far, because the question arose after the investment grade audit is done, should we, what perhaps we need to make clear is we pay for that as a certain amount of money, approximately $500,000 for this. It's a rather large, you know, so. But should we elect to proceed with any part of that? Then they will roll that, what the balance of the $500,000 will be rolled into the construction costs and paid over a period of time. Should we say to PG&E, thank you for your hard work, and we're now going to take all these design documents and go and do it all by ourselves without involving PG&E, then we would need to pay for the rest of the work that they did for the audit. We'd have to pay for that up front. That's my understanding. Is that your
So that is correct. So the investment grade audit, so the 30% documents, the 30% construction design is going to cost us $542,000. $160,000 of that will be required up front. The remainder of that, doesn't matter if we do one of the ECMs or all of the ECMs.
The ECM is control energy.
Energy ECM. You know what I'm going to have to look at my acronym. I normally walk with
No,
a
I know. It's
so.
No.
Energy conservation measures.
Energy conservation
measures, yeah.
So, okay, energy conservation measures.
Thank you. Any one of the 12 projects, if we complete, it doesn't matter if we complete one or all 12, we can roll that the remaining $382,000 into the construction cost. So that would normally be a fee or a loan or an amount that we would have to come up in advance. And so we're just allowed to make that payment on the rears.
Right.
So, because we're going to need to make, we need to spend the money to get to that point anyway. So we're only required to spend the 160 initially.
Another question before we commence.
For John, I guess,
just
to clarify, I want to maybe elaborate on a point. And I know something about this, but there's such a, there's a large audience here of people who I haven't been following.
Sure.
I think it's important to explain how this, the list of projects that we're working, we're financing with this, overlap or cover most of the pre-identified higher priorities. That, in other words, not just because PG&E is coming in here to do things that it feels need to be done for energy conservation, but these things are actually things that have been identified as needs already. So maybe you can explain that a little bit.
So we don't have a budget a part of our pamphlet today, but many of you have seen the budget. And we've spent a lot of time working on putting the budget, the needs of the community and the wastewater plant in priority 1 through 4, obviously one being the most significant. And what we did was we took all of those priority ones that were in, actually all of the priority items that were in the budget, and we moved them into a separate category and grouped them into the PG&E STS program. So the PG&E STS program will pretty much take care of a lot of the stuff, majority of the stuff at the facility itself, but it's going to not take care of other lift stations in the field. We did pick up two of the lift stations that will have, one will be, will supply significant energy reduction due to the over-design of the lift station, and another one is needed just because the lift station is at pretty much at ground level and or below, and it's in a creek, so we need to get that one elevated and rehab. So, yes. On our list of importance, these are some of the single most important items on our list.
Yeah.
We still have a list of items that are falling into number one. And one of the problems that we are, even to this day, we have these items that need to be repaired. And as we've stopped working on these in the with the idea that we would replace, repair, rehab, completely refurbish these items, we're still having to repair them as we go. So since in the last 2 months, we've lost a couple of pumps, and some of the generators, one of the generators that's in this list has failed. And of course, we have it all back up, and we've got the parts to fix the pump, but we're waiting until they fail instead of doing we're keeping up our maintenance, but we know the pump, when it starts making noise, we're not taking it offline because it's making noise. We'd like to run to fail. Because we want to save that money to pay for the PG&E repair.
Before we open it for public comment, I wanted to also verify my own understanding. The items that are on the ECMs, the energy conservation measures, which are being proposed, are things that over a period of 10 to 12 years would be done anyway. Is that true?
Not only that, these are things that should have been done 10 years ago.
Yeah, this is all
These are things that should have been done 10 years ago.
Just wanted to be clear, we're not talking about doing something that we wouldn't otherwise do.
Correct.
What's changing is the timing of when it will be done, and possibly something about the financing. But when we look at the total cost of all these things, you have to bear in your mind that ultimately these things do have to be done. I guess you could raise questions about whether the proposed cost is reasonable, but I do want to remind you what John said, and then I'll shut up, is that what PG&E has given us in terms of the estimated total cost is their worst case scenario, which is the one we want to hear, because we don't want to be sold something that is only going to cost a few dollars and in the end we get a huge bill. So that's not an unreasonable position. So that's all I'm going to say on it. Yes, public comment, and I see Elizabeth Bettenhausen back there.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, or Mr. President, I just want to clarify something, because I think I might well have misunderstood something, Mr. Alchin, that you just said. When are the bids made on each of these projects? I understood you to be saying it's within the 30% process in the IGA. So would you just inform us again, no matter whether CCSD picks the contractor or the subcontractor, or PG&E does, however that's arrived, when are the bids made, and are they open bids on each project?
So the bids will be completed during the IGA, and they'll be after the IGA, after the board has okayed, excuse me, after the board has okayed the expenditure of the $160,000, and PG&E has been given a work order, then we have 8 months. Within that 8 month period, we will have firm numbers for the jobs.
Firm meaning the bidding takes place in two stages. There's a casual bid during IGA up in the 30th. No.
It's a firm bid.
When exactly are the open bids let be known to the public?
Oh.
So we, because we're going through PG&E, we are exempt from many of the requirements that that public entities are held to, and this gives us an avenue to construct, build these items without doing the 100% design and then going out to bid. If we do the 100% design and then go out to bid for each individual item, it would probably take 10 years anyway.
So it's not an open bidding process.
So it's going to be as open as we can make it. And yes, we will be. It will be open. It will be advertised. We're not going to pick some contractor around the corner. We want the best possible contractor at the best price.
Who might be around the corner?
That would be even better. I would be very happy with that. Yeah.
Last further comment, Crosby, and then Cindy.
Crosby Swartz. I have two comments. One of which may already have been resolved, but. There seemed to be some confusion originally about who was going to sign these contracts. Not to take anything away from work that Mr. Alchin is doing, but I think our general manager could probably be the one that would sign these contracts. The other item just involves the due diligence that the board needs to be doing, hopefully with the assistance of this committee and the finance committee. I'm sure the community would like to know that these proposed projects can be paid for out of the existing revenues and that additional rate increases would not be necessary. So even if a lot of it is financed, there's still payments that would be required on certain dates and so forth. And somebody needs to make sure that all this can be done within the existing revenue flows that were allocated to the wastewater capital projects.
Thank you. Seems like a reasonable idea. Cindy?
One of the items that I wanted to mention is that the proposals and bids that would be coming up from the PG&E in this process and the way that it's described are firm fixed price.
Fixed price.
Which I think is an important element.
Yes. Did everyone hear Cindy? Your voice is a little bit soft. Did y'all hear?
Can she stand up?
Oh, sorry, Cindy. Yeah, let's try that again, shall we?
I just wanted to annotate that any of the bids coming from PG&E in this process would be firm fixed price contracts. Mm-hmm. And that's an important element of this and talks to any potential risk.
Oh, yes, and there is also the possibility of grants.
Sure. Possibly. So that's another thing that we will get through PG&E is so there's grants available, there's the ability to pay for a portion of this via on-bill financing. That won't be. We won't know the amounts until after the project is completed. On-bill financing is a 0% interest that PG&E offers. So we pay for the project up front, and then once they've identified the total number of kilowatts saved, they can put a number to that, and then they will cut us a check for that amount over a 10-year period. And that can be upwards of, I believe, $1 to $3 million. But they do have people at PG&E that it's their job to find available money, and that's a part of this whole. That's a part of the sustainable turnkey solution.
That's the turnkey part of it.
Correct.
Yes, way there in the back.
Yeah, my name's Nick Lyons.
Yeah. Thank you, Nick.
So does PG&E's bankruptcy play into any uncertainty about getting this money from them?
So. I don't foresee PG&E disappearing. And the program that we are embarking on could simply change hands if needed. There are other agencies that do the same thing. Our gas company, we don't use enough gas to warrant them coming in and doing that. But there are now outside agencies. The Public Utilities Commission has required that agencies like PG&E splinter off two-thirds of what they're doing now. This is not a new thing. What they're doing for us, they've done multiple times for the city of San Luis Obispo. They're currently involved with a project. They've done multiple times with the county. Santa Maria is right now in the final throes of an IGA and will begin construction soon. So none of this is new, and if for some reason if PG&E was to file bankruptcy, well, they are filing bankruptcy, but if they were to disappear, all of this could just be forwarded into a different entity.
Yes, please.
Just for a sec. I don't expect PG&E to disappear. However, they're not in control of all of their finances if they're in bankruptcy. I'm just saying it puts a certain amount of uncertainty into this.
I can tell you what PG&E has said, and it's business as usual. Sure.
Okay, I think, Paul, I believe you had
it. Yeah, Paul Reichert, live here in town. Having owned an engineering company, my eyes directly go to contracts. Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking at this contract in the back and addressing the comment that was just made. Put my spectacles on for a second. First, I want to back up and I want to say I've had the pleasure to help in consulting with John in the past, and I think this board and this community is really, really lucky to have a guy like him. He's doing a bang-up job in...
Thank you, Paul.
So having read contracts for the major part of my life, I'm focused on the section E1E, termination for default and insolvency. And my suggestion, it basically says that if one party defaults via bankruptcy, the other party has the ability to terminate. Well,
what page?
It's 24. So what my suggestion is with the fact that they are going bankruptcy, that this section gets revised to give us a what do we do? And what's their obligation and what's our obligation? Just a thought. And then I'm really pleased to see in, let me keep going, in section 4, there's limitation of liability. So when I read contracts, the first thing I look for is liability and who's responsible for each side. On section 4, limitation of liability, it says blah, 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 except as required in 7E. There is no 7E.
Oops.
That'd be nice to know.
Okay.
And then finally, indemnification, I am very pleased to see that it's a bilateral indemnification. A lot of times, agencies will have what's called a unilateral indemnification, where it says something to the effect, if I am 1% at fault and you're 99% at fault, I'm 100% at fault. So it is pleasing to me to see the unilateral aspect of indemnification, and we should all be grateful for that. So basically it says one party's indemnifying the other party if you're at fault and vice versa. Anyway, those two items, but I think I would focus on the bankruptcy thing too, just to make sure that we have an out clause on it that says the fact that they are, what terms are we obligated to, and what terms are they obligated to make us real and whole and be able to pursue the end product?
Okay. Thank you, Paul. Brad, let's see. And then, Hank, did you want? Oh, okay. Brad, please.
Yeah, just a clarification. You had mentioned that the contract it had just gone back through our legal, yeah. And this isn't what they finished with.
Do you have the red line contact? Yeah. The red line contract with blue lines is Tim's version.
Yeah. Those are Tim's responses.
Correct.
Yeah, so he made it a unilateral indemnification.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. It's in there somewhere, but yeah.
I have it here.
The blue, it's the red line only, it's blue.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, for those of you who have it.
So this contract has not been signed by PG&E. Nobody has signed anything. This is the contract, and we're back and forth still, so there's no, nobody's signed anything yet.
Further comment from the public? Okay.
Actually.
Oh, yeah, thank you, Mary.
Last time I was here, you talked about the $382,000 that you decide which projects you're going to fund, 1 through 12, and that the $382,000 was dedicated to each of the projects, and it doesn't go back into one fund. Is that still the case, or was the question answered where all the money that goes into one fund, we can pay for any of the projects that we pick, 1 through 12? And I think it was Pablo that was checking on that.
So the answer to that, I believe, is the $382,000 that will be remaining can be lumped into any loans, whether we do one item or 12 items.
Okay.
So whatever loan we get for those items, that money will be, yes.
Okay. Yeah, so yeah, to reiterate, so that's what we believe to be the case. We're still in the final contract. That's a major concern because budgeting, we know that if we go forward, we know we have to think of whether we need to reserve the balance, which would be due the following year if we don't go, because 8 months from, let's say it's approved in September, 8 months would still be in this fiscal year, and we'd have to pony up the balance if we chose not to go forward. But our understanding, just to reiterate, so far is, should we go forward with any one of the proposed items, the entire cost of that initial study for everything will be folded. It will just pay off as part of the construction cost of that, whatever we do.
And so on the back of your flyer, you have the most recent email from PG&E that indicates that.
Okay. But we will want to see it in the contract or in some, you know, something. Further questions? Okay, very good. Everybody, you're with me so far. Any questions or observations from, and then we'll do a motion. Any questions or observations from the committee? Are you all pretty comfortable? I mean, we have been through this before.
Do you have a question, Paul?
Yes, well, it's so much fun. So, okay, is someone wish to make a motion on this? Don't be shy, but I mean, I can do it.
What are we doing?
Oh, what we want to move, okay. What I'd like to hear is a motion to, what did the agenda say? Let's go back.
We've done this once already.
Yeah, I know.
Yes, we have.
We wish to, let's see, how can we, somebody creative. Tom, can you rephrase this?
Well, we want to, upon reviewing the current, I mean, the latest PG&E investment grade audit proposal, we recommend that the CCSD board approve the proposal or approve
go forward.
Go forward with the proposal. I guess that would be the simplest way to do it.
So yep. Let me try that back to you. So upon reviewing the proposed contract and the documents presented to us, we did review these, right?
Yeah.
The committee recommends that the CCSD board go forward with the IGA. Now, remember, guys, it's the board that decides. It's not the folks here. So this isn't the... But at least we're saying as a group, this is our, you know, having examined the situation and heard from everybody that wanted to say anything, that this is our opinion. Now, I should tell you as a board member, because some of you are kind of wondering, well, is this just window dressing, or is this actually a real thing that we're actually doing? I can't speak for other board members, but I'm not going to put 5 volunteers from the community. I'm not going to put them, or if you talk about all the communities, that's 15 volunteers giving up their time without pay to work on this for the good of the community. I'm not going to second guess them. Unless I have some really serious problem. So a mere disagreement isn't going to do it. So even if I didn't agree with what this committee decides, when it comes to the board, I will go with what this committee recommends unless I have some really, really serious problem with it. So I will not second guess these committees. I can't speak for my fellow board members. It's all up to everybody, and they all have their own. But I've already done this with PROS, where the schoolhouse was wanted in one place, PROS Commission recommended it somewhere else. I wasn't going to go against PROS. So I just want that to be very clear out there, because I do get, I do, by the way, I am blind copied on a lot of the email chains. I stay off of social media, I stay out of email, because my words will come back and haunt me. But I do like to keep track of what people are saying, and that was, I did get some sense in some of the back and forth that people were wondering, well, what's the point of this exercise? Well, what I'm trying to tell you is there is a point. And apropos of that, before we go forward, Elizabeth Bettenhausen included a comment from Margaret Mead in one of her correspondence, and I just want to, or no, not, it wasn't, was Nikki Mahela Burton. This is from Margaret Mead. She says, never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. So you all need to be, and I thank you for being here and doing your effort to change the world. So it's important to be here. Thank you. So we've
I second the motion.
Sorry.
I'll be the one here. Somebody should have called me. I'll be the one recorded as having the motion, because I think that
yes,
wasn't clear.
Yes, you made the motion, and Karen seconded it, and we voted, and we did we pass it?
Not yet.
You
no.
Okay. Are you ready for the question? Yes? Okay. All in favor of the motion to, we remembered. Okay. All. Okay. The motion passes to forward the our recommendation to the CCSD board that the board proceeds with the IGA. All right. The next question that we've actually already dealt with, but I'd like to take this opportunity, if anyone has public comment regarding, this is, we're now on 3B. We've heard the committee report already, and where we're going with our goals and objectives. Do any of you in the public have anything that you would like to, at this point, this is your opportunity to speak to the subcommittee. If you have something that you'd like them to consider, or you think they're going down the wrong path, or you like what they're doing, any commentary on the goals and the mission statement? Ted.
I haven't seen, hi, my name's Ted. I have not seen your goals, but I do think that moving forward, one of the things that we need to be mindful of here is ongoing upgrades to equipment for filtration of things, not only what we're talking about here, but down the road. I know that Mr. Alchin and his group have done a fantastic job of working to eliminate nitrates and so on, but I think that one of the goals of your group might be to stay ahead of current trends, looking at how we can be leaders and not followers in terms of treatment of all of the effluent waste that we have.
Any other comments to that, to our subcommittee? Oh, yeah, Leslie, please.
Leslie Richards, Cameron resident. I would also like to talk about the 10-year plan, beyond the 10-year plan. I think we need to have a vision that's more than just crisis to crisis, opening up our viewpoints and the perspective of this committee. Once the CIP list is under control, there's other future CIP products down the line and options, you know, plan B, plan C. It would be nice to see that a broadened spectrum here, not just damage control or emergency processing.
Excellent. Yeah, it would be nice to get to that point.
Yes. Like a capital improvement plan.
Yeah, excellent.
The idea. Cool.
Yes.
Yeah, good. That was very good. Any other comments on that? I'm sure these guys are very happy to receive anything. Again, you can have their email. You can send me a note, and I will put people in contact. So if you want to interact with them more, I'm sure they'll be happy to have it. Okay, we are now, this is pretty good. We have the first hour, we've dealt with everything except the last item. This is to open discussions to receive public input on the process for refining the project description for the EWS/SWF. And Pavel is going to be here. And thank you, John, very much.
I'll let you have the hot seat.
Or you go back to having fun at the
point. I will stick around if you have any questions on EWS.
Before we commence, how are you all? We've been sitting for an hour. Do we need to take a short break?
Can we take a break?
Yes, you can. Well, how do you feel, everybody? Just give me a show of hands. How many don't want a break? It looks like a break is in order. So, we have 5 minutes, and I'll ring you back. Okay. We are now in break.
So...